You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. CookUnity was made for adventurous eaters. With 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small batch meals. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Rogozin, the head of the Wagner Group, said to be in Belarus, said to be in exile, negotiating with the Kremlin for his future, said to be joined by Grupa Wagner, some of his troops. However, Josh Rogan of the Washington Post is here to tell us that Rogozin's fate is not entirely Moscow regarding. There is the International Criminal Court and the expectation that at some point he will answer for the crimes of the Wagner Group throughout the world, especially in Africa, but also in Syria. Josh, a very good evening to you. International Criminal Court has a recognition that it pursues war criminals or crimes against humanity indefinitely. What are the crimes that right now we can verify are under investigation associated with the Wagner Group? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. You know, the Wagner Group has been credibly accused of committing mass murder, mass rape, mass torture, amongst other atrocities, war crimes and crimes against humanity over the past 10 years in a number of different countries, including Mali, including Sudan, including Syria, including Ukraine, and especially in the Central African Republic, sometimes in conjunction with the government forces and sometimes just on their own. And, you know, the reports and evidence of these atrocities are mounting. The UN came out with a report just last month that showed that in the Malian town of Maura, Wagner forces directly participated in the systematic killing of 500 innocent people over 4 days, including women and children. And, you know, Prigozhin, as the longtime founder of that group and leader of it, under international law is responsible for every single one of those crimes under the international law doctrine of command responsibility. Now, the reason that he's been able to escape accountability and justice for a decade is twofold. One, because he had the protection of Vladimir Putin and the Russian government, and two, because he operated in a gray area of private military contractors that are state-sponsored but actually protected by an army of lobbyists and lawyers and financiers. And what I've noticed in the last couple of days, and what international criminal law experts have told me, is that both of those protections are now going away pretty fast. And without the money that he's going to get from the businesses that Putin is taking back from him, he's not going to be able to keep up that army of lawyers and financiers, much less the troops that protect him, that are loyal to him as long as they're getting paid by him. And although he may be in exile in Belarus for the moment, there's a long history of war criminals and international criminals getting either baited or tricked or giving themselves up or eventually finding themselves in the arms of the international court system. And that could happen in a number of ways. And there's no statute of limitations on war crimes. So Prigozhin has to worry about Putin killing him in the near term, but also worry about getting sent to a dock at The Hague in the longer term.
Lukashenko, the dictator of Belarus, he right now is the host of this man in exile and his group. However, Lukashenko has a lot of influence from Moscow. Is it possible for the International Criminal Court to influence Lukashenko, say to influence him with sanctions or some other prosecution that, until he surrenders Prigozhin.
Right. Well, you know, Lukashenko, not a fan of the International Criminal Court, probably deserves to be on the dock himself. Definitely, in fact. And Putin, who's actually been indicted for war crimes, for absconding with thousands of Ukrainian children during his invasion, neither of them are likely to cooperate. But again, there's a long history of these things. And one way it could go down is similar to what happened to Slobodan Milosevic, the former president of Yugoslavia, who thought he was safe in Yugoslavia after the war when the new government came in. But eventually a campaign of pressure and sanctions and public embarrassment compelled the new government to hand him over. There's another case of a Gambian warlord who actually sought extradition in Europe, but they turned on him and jailed him anyway. And then, of course, there's a case of a Congolese warlord who was in Rwanda who had a bounty put on his head, and he got scared that his own guards were going to clip him. So he turned himself in. He walked right into the U.S. embassy and asked to be sent to the court. So you can imagine a number of different scenarios. I think that the U.S. government and international community should pursue all of them, the pressure and the rewards and the trying to get his own people to turn on him. And who knows, one of them might work.
Your column entertains a romantic idea that at some point Prigozhin will recognize that his future is in, say, Poland or Lithuania. He just has to walk across the border and negotiate a deal for himself beforehand or afterhand. Is that imaginable, that he could talk his way out of this? I'll surrender if.
Well, I mean, anything's preferable to getting thrown out of a window in Minsk. So you could imagine a scenario where Prigozhin, who's shown a very strong desire to speak publicly about his grievances with the Russian state, could make a deal. Yeah, he's got a lot of dirt on Putin. And, you know, he might want that platform. He might enjoy getting up at that podium every day during his trial, telling everybody what he thinks really happened in Ukraine and God knows where else. But again, I don't think he's going to do that until his current situation becomes untenable. And I think that there's a lot of ways to make that current situation more untenable, and also to make it untenable for Lukashenko, who in the end could decide that this guy is just too hot to handle.
The money, it comes to down to the money. How much has he got? How much can he hold on to in order to buy his protection from Lukashenko or from Moscow, or to maintain his fighters around him? How do we examine how long he has?
Right. It's no coincidence that when they went into his office with the Russian cameras, they found a building full of gold and diamonds, right. And they found out that he's been getting paid in commodities like oil and gas for his various industrial schemes and shady business operations. He did that for a reason, because he knows that sanctions are coming and he can't trust the banks, and crypto ain't what it used to be. So I guess, you know, that's, again, a very complicated effort to squeeze off all of his finances. But Putin is going to aid that effort because he wants to take the money for himself. So, you know, sooner or later, money talks. And, you know, I don't know how Prigozhin is going to make more of it after he loses control of Wagner. And, you know, I don't know a lot of mercenaries who work without getting paid.
Josh, does this come down to a simple Hollywood version, Prigozhin versus Putin? This is it? One of them is going to get out alive, one isn't?
You know, what I think happened here largely is that we don't talk about what really goes on inside the Russian, call it a deep state, call it an oligarchy. It really is a network of shady financiers and intelligence assets and oligarchs and gangsters. And Putin is just the head gangster. And, you know, when you go to shoot the king, you better not miss. So it's pretty clear that this mafia war is being won by Putin. But there's not any sense that this will be the last skirmish, because once the mafia don is seen as weak, everyone's going to want to take a shot.
And Prigozhin right now, he's not said anything of substance these last days. That seems strange to me. Does it to you, given how voluble he was beforehand?
Well, I mean, we don't know, but it seems to me that his first priority is staying alive, you know, and you know, maybe making sure that his family stays alive. And for that reason, he may see it as in his short-term interest to keep his mouth shut. But he's also a crazy person and a murderer and a villain in the most fundamental sense. And people like that can't stay silent for long. So I'm sure we haven't heard the last of Prigozhin.
Josh Rogan, Washington Post. I'm John Patrick.